Last month, the world took notice when scientists discovered a strange flickering star with a unique and unnatural light curve. It was suggested that it could be an alien structure causing that flickering. But an interesting part of the story is that the star wouldn't have been found if not for the work of a citizen science project called Planet Hunters. Joining us to talk about the group is its founder, Deborah Fisher, professor of astronomy at Yale University. Deborah, thanks so much for joining us.
Yes, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, let's talk about Planet Hunters. How did it get started?
Planet Hunters is a project that I started in 2010 with a colleague, Chris Lintott, who's at Oxford University. Chris had already started several what he called Zooniverse projects, and these were meant to be citizen science projects that engage the public in doing actual research. They're not educational outreach. It's really, you know, having the public help us with research. And we thought for a long time about what the public might do, how they might contribute to planet hunting. And as soon as I saw the NASA Kepler mission data come down in such incredible, enormous quantities, we realized that this is the project that we should have people look at and help us try to find planets that transit or cross in front of their host stars.
About this Kepler project, you said the data came down. So how did the Planet Hunters get involved? What did they do?
So the Planet Hunters, people go and sign up at planethunters.org, and they are shown light curves. So a light curve is the brightness of one of the 155,000 stars in the Kepler field. We show you the brightness of the star over a 30-day interval. And you might imagine a lot of stars are just constant, so their brightness isn't changing very much. Those are boring, and the user will click no transit seen. Other stars will have spots rotating on their surface, and they will get brighter or dimmer as those spots rotate in and out of view. And so those are interesting systems because it's harder for the mathematical algorithms to find transits there. So the users ask to look at the light curve, and the big slow variations are never going to be transiting planets. But if people see a dip in the brightness that lasts for typically a few hours, then they're asked to just click on that decrease in brightness. And that will go into our database, and we will then follow up and try and see if that's a real transiting planet.
So are these volunteers looking at the night sky with a telescope, or are they looking at a computer screen?
They're looking at a computer screen. They're looking at data that's been beamed down from the Kepler spacecraft. Kepler was launched in March of 2009. It's now in an Earth-trailing orbit. And for the first 4 years of its life, it looked constantly at one field in the sky just above the plane of the Milky Way galaxy. And so it collected unblinkingly, if that's a word, light measurements, brightness measurements for 155,000 stars. And every 30 minutes it would take one measurement, and every month it would send down the accumulated measurements that it took.
And what was this discovery like? This must have been incredibly exciting for the people who saw this. Really, something wasn't maybe what they expected.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Planet Hunters have been incredibly successful at finding planets. And in one case, I remember, I totally blew it. They found a planet going around two stars that orbited each other. It was a very bizarre system. And this time, you know, we looked at this light curve. The Planet Hunters had flagged it as something that was just really unusual and that they didn't understand. And we looked at it, and we didn't understand it either. What we saw was that about 4 years ago, the star dimmed in brightness by almost 20%. So it's hard to imagine how a star can do that, just suddenly drop its brightness, unless there's something big that's going in front of it and blocking out the brightness. And so that lasted for a while, and then the brightness came right back up to the normal levels and sort of stayed there for about 2 years. And then about a year and a half ago, we saw another drop in the brightness of the star. But this time, it didn't look at all the same. It was a series of sort of rapid drops and then brightening increases again in the light curve of the star. And that lasted over several days. And so we sort of asked ourselves, you know, why is this one star different from the other 155,000 stars in the Kepler field? And we were just absolutely stumped. We talked to our friends, our colleagues, people on the Kepler team, and no one could come up with an answer. So we decided to just publish the results with all of the analysis that we had done and, you know, just say, look, we've come up empty-handed. Here are a few ideas. There could be a swarm of comets that are going around the orbiting around the star, but that's hard to understand because the brightness dip is so enormous. And, you know, so we're just stumped, and we hope that you all can come up with interesting ideas. And one of our colleagues, Jason Wright at Penn State, said, you know, it's a crazy, crazy idea, but, you know, maybe there's a sort of alien megastructure that's being built around this star by a technological civilization. And we kind of all laughed about that and thought it was a funny idea. And still, it's the explanation of last resort. There's no indication that it's actually an alien megastructure, but, you know, it's a hypothesis. And so now we're setting about just trying to rule out that hypothesis or understand that.
And so these citizen scientists have been able to take part in what scientists, I'm sure, agree to is the most exciting part, new discoveries, and being part of that eureka moment. It must be, as you described it, a pretty incredible time.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think where the public has succeeded is in finding things that are really weird, because the scientists at NASA working on the Kepler mission are incredibly smart, and they thought really hard about what their computer algorithms should look for. And so they're finding the things that they trained their computer algorithms to find. But what people can bring to this is just a pattern recognition of the human brain to say, wait, that looks weird, you know, that, and it might not fit any of the algorithms that were developed to look for these things. So we're finding a lot of interesting, unusual objects, lots of thousands, really, of planets, transiting planets, including planets that orbit at great distances from their host star. We really like those worlds because those are at a distance where, you know, if there's a rocky surface on the planet, then liquid water might pool, and it might be an interesting environment for life.
We're talking with Deborah Fisher right now, professor of astronomy at Yale University and the founder of the citizen science group Planet Hunters, which recently found an intriguing new planet. And Deborah, what's next as far as trying to figure out what the truth is about this new planet that was discovered?
Well, for this one, the SETI team, the team Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, has an array of telescopes in California, and they've already turned these telescopes to look at the star and to try and collect radio wavelength measurements. And so far, the star has been silent. It hasn't revealed anything. But if these are episodic events, you know, that only occur as whatever it is, a broken up planet, comets, or an alien megastructure, if they only orbit around every couple of years, we're going to have to wait another year or so before we see it again. So we have a campaign that's lined up with astronomers all around the world, including amateur astronomers, to keep observing this star and to report if they see anything unusual.
Now, of course, this discovery, this star, K1K or KIK-846, has gotten a lot of attention, but what else have Planet Hunters been able to find?
I think my favorite discovery was when we launched the site in 2010, and it was November or December of 2010, and 4 months later, my postdoc, then Meg Schwamm, came and said, you know, Deborah, the Planet Hunters have found this really weird light curve, and they've drawn a picture of it, and it looks like there are two stars that orbit each other in just a few days, but then they think they see a planet in an orbit that's about 200 days, you know, going outside of the two-star system. And what it would look like if you stood on that planet, you know, is in the daytime when the stars are up, you would have two suns in your sky. It would be really remarkable. And at the time, we hadn't found anything like this, and it seemed like a very long shot. And I remember sort of putting that, you know, on the pile of interesting things in my desk, which is sort of a big pile. And then, in September of that year, so about 5 months later, NASA announced this as the discovery of a planet orbiting two stars, and they nicknamed the planet Tatooine, which comes from Star Wars. And that's a planet where, indeed, Luke Skywalker has two suns in his sky. So it was very aptly named. And I went back and found, geez, they did find it. So they found many unusual objects that have helped the Kepler team to tune up their pipelines, their computer algorithms to search more cleverly. And just things like this strange star, we're calling it Tabby's star after my postdoc, who's led the effort, that we still don't understand.
Well, Deborah, thank you so much. It's intriguing stuff.
Oh, my pleasure.
That was Deborah Fisher, professor of astronomy at Yale University and founder of the citizen science group Planet Hunters.